Hello, and welcome to another exciting episode here at IT Pro TV. I'm your host, Mike Roderick. Today we're doing our CISSP content, and specifically, we're going to be looking at resource protection techniques. And here to help us with that is Mr. Adam Gordon. How's it going, Adam?
Good. My assets and my resources both feel that they are protected. You covered both ends of that conversation. So we're going to talk a little bit about resource protection techniques. You know, a little bit of a shorter conversation in the sense that we're just focusing on this one topic, really just drilling down here a little bit for a few minutes. We're going to broaden our discussion some of the other episodes. But for this area, when we think about resource protection techniques, we're really thinking about how do we approach the protection of media that's storing data? How do we approach the protection of hard copies? You know, we don't often think these days about writing something down on a piece of paper, putting it somewhere and storing it, and having to worry about confidentiality or integrity associated with that. Because so much of what we do today is digital. You know, in other words, it's bits and bytes on a computer. We put a file somewhere, but realistically, the file is electronic. But today, just like it's been probably forever, we still write things down. And so we have to think about both soft and hard copies when it comes to asset protection, at least in terms of data. We also obviously have to think about protecting hardware. So there's a lot of different areas that we focus on. We think about soft copy media. We're thinking about optical drives. We're thinking about magnetic media. Solid state media today is becoming more popular. You may have data on an SD card, for instance, right? You have to think about or worry about thinking about protecting that. And, you know, SD cards may be, and they are, relatively small. They could be secreted almost everywhere or anywhere. They're in your phone, for instance. They're going to be in potentially computers, depending on the kind of systems you have and how you're setting up your systems to boot. A lot of virtualized hosts these days are going to be able to be run off SD cards. So VMware, for instance, will install or at least allow and support the installation of ESXi onto SD cards inside the servers, and then you can effectively boot from an SD card. You know, an SD card is, you know, all about this big on average. So, you know, putting something like that into play and having to worry about securing that can present some challenges just from a space perspective. I mean, if you think about the fact that in reality, we're talking about safeguarding physically something that is about this size, right? And may even be, I don't know, something like about, that size. If I keep going, I can make a swan, by the way. I'm very good at that kind of stuff. Studied origami with the master in Japan. I am now the origami queen and king, all in one. But the reality is, you know, we're talking about very, very small physical devices, right? And so in that case, something just literally getting lost could be the biggest issue we have to worry about, because it falls out of a device, we don't realize it's there, it's small enough that somebody may not realize what it is, they may pick it up and throw it away, not understanding it. So we have to think about that as well as the fact that we have to safeguard the data on the actual device. The data stored on the SD device is also going to be obviously potentially critical for us, could be mission critical, could have confidentiality, integrity concerns associated with it. Paper, microfiche concerns with regards to hard copies. Talked about microdots and how they were used to secret information with regards to steganography, one of our prior conversations in another episode. Microfiche may be something that some of you out there just don't really have a point of reference for. You may not understand because it is older technology. It is something that literally is a generational thing. So are rotary phones, I guess, right? Because that's also something you may not realize existed at some point. But the reality is, you know, you just may not have a point of reference for this technology because it's not something you may actually come across on a regular basis. But we used to at a certain point, and we still do, but you don't really see it in many organizations. You see it in libraries. If you go and look up referenceable material, you will certainly see it in certain organizations that store records this way. But the reality is microfiche is basically film. And when I'm talking about film, I'm talking about the kind of film we would use in theory, not to take pictures per se, but a different kind of film. It is a clear sheet of film that we use, and we store information that has been photographed onto it. It's reduced down, so it is going to be effectively shrunken, and you can put a lot of information on maybe a 2x2 square or something like that, or a 4x4 sheet of microfiche. And you need a microfiche reader, which is really just a large device, kind of a box-like device with a glass plate on it. It shines a light up from underneath or a light from on top, depending on how it's set up. And it's really just a large magnifying glass that's kind of set up so that you can then see what's on the microfiche and understand what's there. So you would need this kind of technology to access the data, but the reality is, you know, you can easily figure out how to do that by putting a piece of microfiche in front of a projector. If it's displayed at a certain distance, the projector will actually then throw up on the wall what's on the microfiche as well. So safeguarding the physical media can be sometimes a bit of a challenge. We have to lock this stuff up, not only in a secure place, but we have to worry about environmental concerns with regards to storage. If it's too hot, the microfiche can be damaged. If it's too wet, you know, and there's mold or things of that nature that come into play because of humidity, we could damage the information, damage the storage medium. Same thing with paper records. Obviously, clearly water and paper, never a good idea. Fire and paper, not a good idea unless you invite water to the party, in which case it's actually a really cool concept. Fire, water, paper. You have yourself a little messy party, but it's kind of fun. But the reality with these kinds of physical media concerns are we have as many environmental concerns as we have physical security concerns. And we don't tend to think a lot about that with some of the other stuff because, you know, you take, like I probably do, I know you do, I have thumb drives sitting in my car that are probably been there since I bought the car. I never take them out. They just sit there because every so often I need one. So I always have one or two there in case I'm stuck somewhere and I have it, and therefore I can do, you know, use it for whatever I need. Those things sit and bake in the sun, maybe 120 degrees in the car, 130 in the middle of summer when it's parked somewhere, because I do live in the armpit of the United States of America, and it's wet and humid all the time. And so the reality is that, you know, for that kind of stuff, we just don't even think about it. We just take it for granted that stuff will be there and it's okay. And indeed, it normally is, right? I mean, it's not, you know, in reflection, when I think about it, it's not a good idea. It's not a best practice. I wouldn't want to put something on there that I was worried about losing irretrievably and leaving it in the car for 2 years to bake. But the reality is it's still probably going to be okay. The same thing with a paper file. In theory, if I leave it in the car, nothing's going to happen to it unless somebody comes and smashes the window and takes it from me. But physically, it's perfectly fine sitting in the heat. It's really not going to have a problem. But when we think about the fact that in data centers, too much heat is really the biggest enemy we have, as well as too much humidity. And so we have to be thinking about these things and environmental concerns with regards to the safe operation of electronic media is also going to be very important for us. So we want to think about not just environmental concerns, not just physical concerns, but as we've always talked about, how do we safeguard the data on the device? Certainly encryption, number one thing we're often going to always think about, encrypting during transit, encrypting at rest, encrypting potentially during use. We have to have applications that support encryption. These are all going to be important things to consider. Want to think about cloud storage. We have to deal with the issues and concerns of data in the cloud. May not be directly within our purview, our security perimeter to defend. We're going to rely on a vendor to do this for us. So now we have to worry about contractually making sure the vendor's up to the task. We have to focus on due care, due diligence responsibilities, have to make sure we detail out in our SLAs, as we've talked about in some of our prior discussions, what the expectations are. And we have to make sure that we have a focus on the operational specifics of security when we're giving or transferring the risk and the liability to manage the data to another party, in this case to a third-party vendor, typically a cloud service provider. We may also include managed security services providers, what are called MSSPs in that mix. They may not be cloud providers in the traditional sense. They simply may be a managed service company that we're going to contract with to come in and manage our security, our data on-prem, but they're going to be an outsourced vendor that effectively will take over management of that particular system for us. So again, we want to think about that, want to be aware of that. Cloud-based storage concerns, you know, as we've talked about, data certainly, is it secure? So is it encrypted when it's stored? Is it encrypted when we're accessing it? So data in transit, data at rest, also data in use, encrypted there. Is the network secure? Are the devices secure? Are the APIs, the software interfaces the vendor provides, are they secure? You know, in general, in other words, same conversation, but simply stop stop at the border internally in your network and say, okay, this is me without cloud. Remember those commercials years ago for, you know, hey, don't, you know, say no to drugs, all that stuff? Remember the ones about this is your brain? This is your brain on drugs, right? Uh-huh. The guy would crack the eggs in the pan, fry your brain up, right? Kind of graphic, right? But the reality is, you know, think about it this way. This is your network without cloud, right? So your security perimeter stops at the edge of the LAN, the border of the LAN WAN, which is basically your gateway, right? Your network on cloud, I was about to say your brain on cloud, your network on cloud, right, is going to be everything that goes not up to the LAN WAN border, but actually goes out through that border to the provider, right? Because in effect, the cloud is now going to be the operational environment. And it is ubiquitous, as we know. It's everywhere, right? It's remotely accessible, it's scalable, it's resource pooled, and it is metricized or measured for use. All these things are defining characteristics of the cloud. So the advantage of that is your data is everywhere. The downside to that is your dad is everywhere. And so as a result of that, we have to think about the fact that the border that we now have to worry about defending is not one that's well demarcated, not one that we understand and we control directly, but rather one that we stand out and look on the horizon towards, and we see that it is literally ever moving back from us. Every time we try to get close to it, it's further away, because the cloud provider is managing, if not all, almost all of the infrastructure, and certainly all of the data that is placed on that infrastructure is held by and ultimately managed by the cloud provider. So we do need to think about this and be concerned about this as well. We have to think about virtualized storage, you know, software defining storage and virtualizing it are cloud related concepts that we have to understand as security professionals, whether it's host-based storage, device-based storage, whether we use a NAS, a network attached storage device, we may use a SAN, storage area network, we may have virtual SAN, which is effectively a local storage pool, a RAID 5 array that's created through multiple local hard drives across multiple hosts. There's different ways to do this. Some of it may be specific to us and we control. Again, some of it may be external to us and may be provided across the network by a vendor. We have to think about this. What about archival and offline storage? Again, we may have long-term storage repositories that are being used, and we have to worry about data that is there, but they're not being used in the same way. We're storing long-term retention data there, right? 7, 8, 12-year retention cycles where we're not really going to go to the data very often, if at all, after it's been marked for archiving, but we are going to have to keep it. We are going to have to audit it. So every year we kind of go there, we check to see who's accessed the data, what condition it's in. Is the encryption still strong enough? Are all the attributes still in place? Is everything okay? We'll do a quick sanity check, if you will, on the data, but we're probably not going to use it very often. It's like a deep freeze, right? In that respect, the data has to be secured, but it's going to have to be secured with slightly different protections and thought processes because we're not in and out of there on a daily basis. So while auditing and accounting, authentication, authorization are all important, we're not going to exercise that very often. So we have to have additional controls that are monitoring that system to ensure that if somebody does knock on that door and try to get in, we're alerted immediately because there's so little activity that whoever goes there, really we have to pay attention to, because chances are good if they're going there out of a normal business cycle around typically an audit preparation to check the data, then there may be a concern there. Right, because otherwise somebody's got to go through a sign-out process to check in and check out that data. And if they're not following that, they're probably up to no good. So we have to think about archival and offline storage as well. Record management in general, very important. How do we do record and information management? How do we engage in those activities? How do we audit for access? How do we audit for compliance? These are all concerns of ours. Also, disposal and reuse with regards to data. We've spoken a lot about this in some other areas of knowledge that we've discussed in other episodes. We've talked about data remnants, data that's being left behind after we clean and clear a solution. So if we simply overwrite a drive one time, we can assure ourselves, and I can assure you, that data will be left behind, because the data that is there is not necessarily being destroyed or deleted. The file allocation table that tells us where the data is on the drive is being reset. But the reality is the data still lives there in the sectors and the clusters on the drive that it was assigned to. We may not have realization of it because we don't see a record of it anymore. That doesn't mean the data is not there. It just means that we can't tell it's there using traditional tools. We have to use special tools that can go in at a low level and find the data and then show us what's there by mapping it. So disk recovery and data recovery tools can be used here. So we have to think about this. Media destruction. How do we destroy media? Really the only traditional way to get rid of media that is safe and beyond reproach is to effectively melt the media and liquefy it, right? Throw it in a furnace. It's got to be high enough temperature, hot enough to be able to effectively melt metal. If it does that, the data is essentially gone, right? You know, think of the idea of putting it into a gas furnace or something that burns at 1,000, a couple of thousand degrees. And, you know, like you see on those documentaries where they take the steel out or the gold out or something, they're smelting and, you know, they pour it out of the, you know, the big holding bin, and all of a sudden it's this like liquid stream of metal. That's what we're thinking about. If you could do that to a hard drive, then we can pretty confidently say there's nothing you're going to recover. But if you don't do that, if you shred the drive, if you use a hammer mill to beat it to pieces, if you drill holes in it, I mean, these are all things that can be done. Reality is there may be pieces left. I'm not saying it's going to be easy. I'm not saying you're going to have a complete solution to work with, but there may be fragmentary pieces of the platters that are left, even if you take the platters out and etch them. I mean, people do all sorts of crazy things. whatever you do, if you don't destroy the platters, and it's not the actual hard drive, it's the platters inside the drive we're worried about. In the case of a solid state drive, it's the actual memory that's storing the information within the drive. The drive casing itself, the electronics, we don't care about those. Give them to a hacker. Take the platters out, give those to a hacker. They've got some fancy paperweights, maybe some cool things to make art and, you know, arts and crafts projects out of. They can go to the local county fair, may open a little booth, you know, art by hack, something like that. Whatever it is, but it's not going to do them any good. You're not going to give them any information. What you need to really safeguard are the platters that store the data, because that's really what we need. The rest of the stuff's just effectively, you know, housing, protective, and access, right? You know, you're using electronics to read the data. But the electronics that are used to read the data don't retain any data when the drive is powered off. So the reality is it's all on the platters. So first of all, we could strip a drive down, obviously, focus on that. But out beyond that, if we just take those platters and try to destroy them without really totally getting rid of everything that makes the platter itself readable, we're still going to leave data behind is the point. So we do need to understand that. What about software that's installed on a system? There may be data associated with that. If we uninstall software, are we truly getting rid of all the data? How many times have you seen those pop-ups? Although they're not as often today, not as prevalent in Windows. But years ago, if you remember, you would uninstall a software product, and it would say, hey, there's all these DLLs that seem to be shared. They seem to be pretty important. Windows is using them. But we think you should delete them. What do you think, right? You would get that prompt that would basically say, yeah, do you want to get rid of these things or not? And, you know, you didn't know what to do because the system was basically saying, hey, it looks like we need these things, but, you know, we may want to get rid of them just, you know, because. And so, you know, you would often say no because you didn't know any better. You wouldn't know whether or not they really were important. And so you would leave behind a lot of additional junk that ultimately over time would pile up and may or may not be important, may or may not be prevalent, may or may not be a security liability, but clearly was potentially going to prove to be a challenge over time. That may not be the same thing as leaving data behind, but the reality is there may have been data associated with that installation or uninstallation that also was not removed. And so we have to be thinking about all these kind of things when we're thinking about you know, how we're going to use protection mechanisms to safeguard media. This is going to be the kind of conversation that, in our mind, a CISSP is going to want to have, right? And ultimately, a CISSP is responsible for. As you remember, we've talked about, and I've stressed to you in many of our discussions together, it's the CISSP's responsibility to focus the business on these risks. We may not have all the answers, but it's our responsibility to drive the conversation and ultimately frame the questions that will lead to solutions.
Very good, Adam. A great look at how we can employ our resource protection techniques across a wide variety of media that we've got to consider. All right, remember, if you guys want to attend one of Adam's classes live, all you got to do is shoot us an email, cadam@itpro.tv. That being said, we're going to sign off for now. I'm Mike Roderick.
I'm Adam Gordon.
And we'll see you next time.